Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I'm Neil McCready. Russell Johnson is here as well. You'll hear from Rob Cassidy of Rivals.com on the show. Russell and Rob talked for about, I don't know, 26, 27 minutes. You'll hear that here momentarily. Rob talks, they talk some recruiting, talk some college football as we get closer and closer to the start of the college season. The high school season already underway. Some injuries have already occurred. Recruiting very much going on. There's a story at RebelGrove.com today by
Chad Simmons.
Thank you, about N'Kobe Dean. You want to read that. There's a lot of detail in it. N'Kobe Dean rarely goes that in-depth about recruiting. He went in-depth with Chad. So that's at RebelGrove.com. It's part of the Rivals Network. If you don't subscribe, you should. It's very cheap, cheaper than a sandwich. You get a month's worth of recruiting meat and other stuff for less than a sandwich. It's hard to beat. Speaking of food, check out Billy's Pecans. Maybe you're getting ready for your high school tailgates. You're getting ready for that road trip to Houston. Getting ready for your Saturdays in the Grove. September the 8th, Southern Illinois is in Oxford. September the 15th, Alabama is here. You will probably do some tailgating. Get some of those pecans. They're great. I like just the toasted pecans. Of course, I'm a really simple guy. I like the cinnamon spiced as well. If you want something a little sweeter, they've got that too. Dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier, sugar-free, gift bags, pecan pieces, the whole deal. They've got the cheese crispies, which are just fantastic. Sauces, jellies, coffee cakes, and more. Get in touch with Stacy and Bailey and the people there at Billy's Pecans. They'll take great care of you. It's billyspecans.com, 1-800-624-7404. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. There's no haggling, no hassle. It's right to the bottom line. You get a great product, great service after the sale, delivery options. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll prove it to you. Ask for a quote. Get that quote. And then at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans, and you'll save $500 on your already great deal. Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. Russell, how are you?
Doing good. I survived the tornadic thunderstorm of summer 2018 in Oxford, so I'm doing well.
No, that was nothing.
I was a bit scared, I can tell you that. You know, when you see the power flicker and you're watching the Braves and you're up 1-0 and already nervous about that, and then you get it keeps interrupting with severe thunderstorm warning, tornado warning. Even though the tornado warning wasn't for this part of Lafayette County, it definitely gets your heartbeat up quite a bit.
Yeah, I guess so. Whatever reason, I could tell that one wasn't going to be like one of the big bad boys. I never really got all worried about it.
Lucky you. Now,
I was watching Brewers and Reds and just waiting for the Reds to blow it, and they did. And so anyway, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get to Rob in just a moment, and then we'll come back. We'll talk some topical stuff that's going on with you. First, let me tell people this podcast is brought to you also by Lentz & Little. Lentz & Little Private Attorneys is Central and South Mississippi's law firm that you want to hire for business advice and commercial litigation, whether you're having trouble paying your debts or someone isn't paying you what they agreed to pay. Lentz & Little can quickly advise you of your best course of action. Lentz & Little has over 60 years of collective experience representing companies and individuals in defaulted loan workouts, collections, repossessions, and foreclosures, representing banks as well as companies having financial difficulties. Lentz & Little offers creative solutions to financial problems. Attorneys at Lentz & Little have the versatility you need, regardless of whether you need help with general business advice, issues with payment of taxes, or representation in state court, federal court, or bankruptcy court. If you're in need of advice or assistance with your financial situation, call Jarrett Little at 228-867-6050. Visit their website at lentzlittle.com. That's L-E-N-T-Z little.com. Or email Jarrett at lentzlittle.com. So earlier this morning, we talked to Rob Casty, specifically Russell talked to Rob Casty of Rivals.com. About 26, 27 minutes here. It's good stuff. I think you'll enjoy it. Take a listen.
We're joined by Rivals.com's Rob Casty here on the Soft Verbal Podcast. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing, man. How are things with you guys?
Doing good. We had a little bit of some thunderstorms here yesterday. I get a little bit scared still of them, even a year in. But other than that, you know, football season's underway over here, so things are picking up pretty quick. Have you guys started the season?
Wait, what magical land did you move from where there were no thunderstorms?
In Ohio, it doesn't storm much; it snows. And when it does storm, it's just like a little bit of a scattered thunderstorm here or there, maybe some hail. But here, it seems like every day there's something going on.
We should all hope to live in such a magical place like Ohio.
Yeah, if only. Have they started high school football in Florida yet?
Yeah, they did some of the kickoff classic games last weekend. I went to one here in Miami, and week one is this weekend. I'll be in Orlando.
Okay. Who'd you see last week?
It was a jamboree. It was Chaminade, Madonna, and Hollandale and Columbus.
Some good teams there.
So it was, I mean, it's, you know, the John Dunmores of the world and guys, you know, going to a lot. It was like half of Miami's recruiting class was in that.
Right. How's Miami's class looking so far? I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about it on a national scale, but Miami's class, they picked up, what was it, Zachary Couch and obviously several others so far.
Yeah, their 2020 class is a little bit better than the 2019. They had some guys committed there. You know, they had Leonard Manuel, the five-star, committed there for a while, and they lost a lot of those guys, which tends to happen for whatever reason with Miami. Everybody commits to Miami right away, and then half of those guys decommit. And it just seems to happen every year. And last year, they kind of did a pretty good job of holding on to them. This year, it's gotten away from them a little bit. I mean, the class is still fine. They've got guys like Corey, like you mentioned, and Cameron Williams, and a lot of good players in that class. Mark Britt. He's in the 2020 class. But it's not as good as that 2020 group is right now. And like I said, that 2020 group may decommit too. And, you know, who knows? It's a weird cycle with Miami. It seems to happen every single year.
Yeah, it definitely does seem to do that. You've got 2020 meetings coming up this week. What are some early storylines going on in the state of Florida for the class of 2020?
You know, it's just in general, I get a little bit, you know, eye-rolly when it comes to ranking these kids before their junior years. They always end up, I'm probably not supposed to say this out loud, but these early rankings for 2020 are so hard. This one's usually a little bit better, but this is the third update. You know, we haven't seen when we start in the middle of the off season with these kids that aren't juniors yet, ranking them. There's no possible way a guy like me has seen every 2020 in the state. So it's basically just, here are a lot of really good players that I've seen already. It ends up working itself out at the end, but it's just so tough before they play their junior year. So I guess the real storyline is we'll be adding guys that we saw this offseason, that we've seen early this season, that weren't on the, you know, on the radar going into the offseason.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, covering the entire state of Florida, that gets to be pretty taxing, you know, traveling around. But being in Miami, I'm sure helps quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. You know, that could be working in the mines. You know, it's not that taxing. It's still, you know, covering football for a living, so it's better than some.
Right. Now, the recruitment of wide receiver TJ Jones, I believe he's from the Columbia area?
Yeah, he's from up north.
Yeah,
they played. Go ahead.
What do you know about his recruitment? Obviously, everybody wanted to talk about him because he decided he wanted to wear Ole Miss gloves to his first game of the season. But I'm not really sure how much Ole Miss is either in the picture or really wants to be in the picture currently.
Yeah, you know, these kids will wear anything you give them, though. You know, I would, too. There's no doubt about it. You gave me Ole Miss gloves, and I was a football player, I'd be wearing them, too. I don't know. I think he got off to a pretty hot start last year, and we ranked him as a three-star, I believe, a high one. And they played IMG the first week of the season, which kind of gave him kind of a high exposure game, I think. And, you know, he's a guy that's on the back burner for a lot of schools. I know Miami kind of liked him. I don't think he's really a take for Miami right now. Some other schools kind of liked him. But he's one where if he has a good season this year, and then, you know, a Miami or even like one of these other schools down here, possibly a Florida State, misses on a few guys, then they may turn to him. But I don't think he's the kind of guy that can commit to a power conference, like a major blue blood school at the moment.
Right, right. That's what I was thinking. I know during the camp circuit and everything, he was expected to visit Oxford, and I'm not exactly sure if that visit actually ended up happening.
He's a fine player, I think. I think people just want to see a little bit more from him because he's not, you know, he's not like a 6'4 wide receiver. He's, you know, goes about 5'11, and, you know, he's not a track guy that's going to blow you away with a 5'2. He just does a lot of things fairly well. And, you know, he's a good backup guy that I could see getting hit with, you know, becoming in demand as we go down the stretch, because you know how it goes. When people miss on target one and target two and target three, then the scramble starts, and guys like TJ end up reaping the rewards from that.
Especially if he doesn't sign early.
Yep.
I mean, because we saw that last year, kind of as things went on, everybody had questions and a little bit of doubt and a little bit upset, actually, about the early signing period. And as time went on, it kind of the pieces kind of got put together and things made sense.
Look, if everybody learned anything from last year, it would be, you know, a lot of these top guys are going to sign early. So just if you think that you may get an offer, maybe just wait instead of signing with an FAU if that's not where you want to go, or signing with, you know, even like, you know, one of these lower tier FBS schools. If you just hold on, the pickings get slim. We saw that. More than half the class signed in December last year. And when the pickings are slim, the odds are in your favor as a player.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And speaking of Florida Atlantic real quick, one of my favorite cornerbacks in this class, Marcus LaFrance, he's currently committed there. Are other Power 5 schools or other schools in the state kind of reaching out to him?
Not right now, you know, and he's set up to where he has. I mean, I think reaching out to him, yes, but I don't think he is a priority target for any of the Power Conference schools in the state and beyond right now. He's another one, though, that, you know, he goes into what we were just talking about. You know, you like him, I like him, I loved him. I saw him at the Express Tryouts this year. He's not huge, but you don't really have to be huge to play that position anymore, it seems like. You know, he's probably 5'10". But, you know, he's one that if he waits, and he may well want to go to FAU. I don't want to disparage the Owls here. People love Lane down here. He's really made an impact, and I think it's become kind of a desirable place because there is, you know, so much attention put on them now. It's almost like they're a group of five school with kind of a Power 5 cachet because Kiffin's there. So it makes it easy for them to recruit against other group of fives. And, you know, maybe that's where he wants to be, but I could see him getting more opportunities.
Now, what about Cortez Andrews? Obviously, he dropped a top five in I think it was May. And some Ole Miss commits and targets, they kind of been showing love, trying to figure out where he's at kind of in the recruiting process.
I haven't seen him. He didn't come to a camp. I haven't seen or talked to that kid in almost a year. I'll probably get to one of his games this year. I don't want to, you know, speculate on where exactly he is right now. I think he's a talented kid that's going to have options, obviously. But, man, I can't even remember what he said to me the last time I talked to him. It was probably last offseason. He's one that I don't know if he was hurt or if he just took the camp season off. I just never ran into him this offseason.
There's a lot of that, especially – well, I don't know how much happens in Florida, but in Mississippi, obviously, it's a real problem with coming to camps and not showing up or telling people you're coming, getting registered, and then not showing.
Now, most of them all showed in Florida, unless there was injuries or certain. I mean, there's just so much. I think it's different, though, in Mississippi, though, because there's so much here, right? You have our things. You have the Nike camps. You have a 7-on-7 every weekend somewhere. There's something going on, a big event, every single weekend of the offseason. So if you are dedicated to go to enough of these things, like I am because I like my job and like money, you'll see most of the kids somewhere, right? So there are very few that slip through the cracks. In Mississippi, I mean, how many really elite events are there? And plus, the talent is so spread out in Mississippi. Back to when I used to cover it, it's so hard. The reason people slip through the cracks in Mississippi isn't because nobody goes to Mississippi. It's that there are a lot of good players in Mississippi, but there's one at each high school, right? And then yep. You go to the Alabama-Mississippi game at the end of the year, and there are dudes that I've never seen before. That it's like, all right, who's the 6'8 giant kid? You know, that's probably. So we end up making an unranked kid a 4-star at the end of the cycle every year just because nobody's ever seen these guys in real life because nobody's taken the time to drive to 15 different high schools in Mississippi. It's all too spread out. Right. It's not a St. Thomas or an IMG or, you know, a place where the entire two deep is going, do you want?
Yeah, that would make my job a lot easier. But unfortunately,
yeah, no kidding.
You've got quite a bit of talent in the north half of the state with, you know, like N'Kobe Dean and Ra'Darius Jones at Horn Lake. And then all the way down on the coast, you've got Gulfport's Derek Hall. You've got tons of kids on both sides of the spectrum. So it definitely does make things a little bit difficult. Now,
yeah, it'd be nice to have the super team concept out there, right?
Oh, it would be, but I don't. They recruit, the high schools do over here, but they don't recruit at the level that the schools in Florida and Georgia and those kind of states do.
Plus, you guys probably have pesky rules. Like, Florida's just gotten rid of it. There used to be a rule that nobody observed, and now it's just an open market. I mean, you can go anywhere you want. There's no rule about sitting out years. There's no rule about where you can and can't play. You can just play.
And they've kind of policed themselves, or at least to some degree, it seems. Like, are there any teams that are just overly loaded besides IMG?
Well, St. Thomas, you know, and then when you get into, you know, then in Orlando, the good players are really at Wakaiva and Jones. And Dr. Phillips, and you know, the power swings, right? So, you know, sometimes Miami Central is completely loaded, and other times it's Northwestern. But yeah, a lot of teams, Lakeland is always stealing guys from Lake Wales. There's six or seven or eight schools that recruit better than everybody else.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. You know, just basically going off of that list. Now, is the normal state of Florida in terms of a ranking standpoint? Is there always around 55 to 64 stars in each class, or is it kind of a lower or higher year compared to normal?
I haven't gone through and counted this year. It seems like the town on the top isn't as good this year. As far as the five stars goes, we just made Evanil a five star, and that's kind of based on potential. But other than him, you know, it's Akeem Dent. And usually it seems like there's more elite talent at the top that separated itself than it has in 2019, and I think the 2020 class is probably a little better at the top. So I'll say it's a down year at the top. The depth is always there, and I always talk to Larry Bluestein, who was kind of the godfather of recruiting down here, about this. The difference between Florida and Texas or Ohio or any of these other states isn't the top talent. I mean, everybody's got five or six guys that are awesome. It's when you get down in the guys between 50 and 100 that Florida kind of separates itself. It's just the depth of talent here. Every single year. I mean, the number 105 player in Florida is capable of going and playing at a major Power 5 school every single year. I don't think you see that anywhere else.
No, I can definitely agree with you. Going into the top 10 in the state, you've got Chris Bogle, at least in the updated state rankings, at number 8 in the state. You saw him at the five-star challenge. What did you think?
Yeah, we loved him. We moved him way up again. I think that he's on pace to really be something special. He continues to add weight. I think he's the kind of guy that can go in, and if they need him to at the SEC or in the ACC or wherever he ends up, is a guy that can play right away. The knock on him was always a little too slight to play that end position, and that seems to be gone. I mean, he's really added weight the last year and has kind of retained the quickness. I thought he dominated our event up there. I thought he was incredible against the other top players in the country.
Yeah, he climbed his way all the way up into the top 50 nationally, it looks like. Is there any chance of him playing linebacker at the next level, or do you see him as that defensive end on the weak side?
I think he's one of those hybrid types. I don't think that he's going to play full-time outside linebacker, but he has, just because the length is so there. I think he can be one of those hybrids that can be kind of a rush, that can play standing up if you need him to, but then you can use him as kind of a rush end as well.
No, do you know much about his recruitment currently? Yeah, it seems like there's really three schools.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, it's going to be Tennessee, Miami, or Ole Miss, I think. I saw him at South Florida Media Days, where he told us that his mom had decided that, who was forever in love with Miami, wanted him to go to Miami, went and, you know, got to know the Ole Miss staff and certainly kind of turned on her head and now wants him to go to Ole Miss, according to him. Mom always has a say in the matter. I, for the longest time, thought he was going to Miami. I still think that's probably where he'll end up. But when he no-showed their camp to go visit Tennessee, kind of opened my eyes to maybe it's not as much of a done deal as I thought it was previously. I still think Miami's the team to beat, but I think Tennessee and Ole Miss both have a shot here as he gets closer to a commitment.
With recruits considering Tennessee, do you think they care or they worry at all about the product that they put on the field this year? Or do you think Pruitt has him all in on the future.
Nah, he's got to do something. I mean, he can't go. I mean, the Vegas over-under for them is like 5.5. And if, which, you know, they're pretty good at predicting these things, right? Like, they didn't build those casinos in the desert because they suck at setting lines. If they don't go to a bowl game, Pruitt or whoever, Tennessee's fan base has convinced themselves that they're going to win 8 games. That the problem was Butch. It's over. They're awesome. Tennessee is back. There's going to be some restless people if they win 4 or 5 games, which I don't think is out of the question. Obviously, neither does Las Vegas. And I think along with that kind of restless fan base will come restless recruits because they've kind of also convinced themselves that everything is okay there and it's not a long rebuild. And when you have expectations and then those expectations fall flat on their face, if they do, then recruits start maybe thinking, okay, maybe this isn't the stable program I thought, and start looking around a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see that happen, especially if, like you said, things kind of fall apart. I mean, Tennessee has questions at quarterback, and then, I mean, all throughout the SEC, between Tennessee, there's questions. LSU has several questions, including quarterback and the future of their head coach. There seems to be a lot of storylines picking up for the SEC coming into the season.
Jeremy Pruitt may be a great head coach, and even if he is, though, bringing in a first-time head coach and a transfer quarterback from Stanford and expecting everything to be fine, I think is a little bit optimistic, and it's possible. I'm not saying Tennessee is for sure going to go 5-7. I'm just saying we got to consider the possibility that they might go 5-7 because it is a first-year head coach with a team that was – I mean, I don't know if people forgot how bad that roster was last year, but it was – man, it was tough to watch sometimes.
Yes, it was. It was very tough to watch, and it was especially with the trash can and everything that was going on with that.
Yeah, well, that made it easy to watch. The trash can, at least, you know, I'm all for memes and funny things happening on the sidelines, so that at least distracted from the product on the field.
My my last real recruiting question before we get to your over-under on Ole Miss is Kenny Logan, the safety who showed up at Ole Miss in camp this summer. It was really impressive, but seems to have gone down the wayside a little bit in terms of the board.
Yeah, he's one that's also, you know, playing where he plays up in St. Augustine, which is, you know, kind of like a resort town near Jacksonville, where actually my boss lives, which is strange. Maybe I should make him go see him. I think that kind of allows him to kind of fly under the radar, too, because there are other players at other schools that are easier to get to. I haven't seen him in a year either. I loved him. I you know, I think he's a good player. I think that he needed to add some size last time I saw him. I think we had him ranked at a 5'6". I have not looked at him, but I believe that's where I ranked him originally, and I don't think I would have changed it because I haven't seen him in a while. But I plan on being up in the Jacksonville area for a Trinity game, so maybe I'll pop in on him and see him then and kind of try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, he was impressive. I mean, he did really well in the drills and everything. It was just a matter of... They didn't offer him? No, he has an offer. I don't know if he got an official offer on August 1st. You know how that goes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because they have 3 safety commits, and then they're still really high on Cortez. So,
yeah, well, I think that, you know, I think they can be in play for Cortez. I mean, at least everything that I know about him, speaking to his coaches and stuff, like I said, I didn't see him this offseason, but he's one that we'll for sure see in this season.
Yeah, definitely, especially I've heard that some of the in-state schools have kind of cooled off on him as time has gone on, and basically been kicking the can down the road a bit in terms of whether or not they're going to take his commitment at that stage where he probably wanted to make that choice.
Yeah, these in-state schools have really, I mean, they're really filling up, except for Florida. I don't know what Florida's doing. Florida State and Miami are kind of having their way, Florida State and Tampa and Miami down here, and they filled up pretty quickly. I mean, especially if you look at Miami's class, it's growing. Florida State's is growing with talent. Florida has just decided not to recruit the state, I guess. I guess they only recruit Mississippi and Alabama now and Georgia. No, but they've just, like, forfeited. it's one of the strangest things I've ever seen.
Well, see, what Florida's going to do is they're going to get kids to commit in the state of Mississippi, and then they're going to get them to transfer to the state of Florida, and then they become ranked in the state, and then they're good.
Yeah, that's the move with DeJuan, right? I don't know how many times they can pull that off. I really don't know. I mean, I've been talking about it with people that I know that cover Florida. I don't know who – I mean, and maybe – I mean, Dan Mullen's a great coach, so he knows better than I do. But I don't know how you expect to win there consistently if you're just going to ignore South Florida and Central Florida even and just try to supplement this from the north. Maybe that's not the long-term strategy. maybe it's just a one-year thing as they get acclimated to the new, you know, the new surroundings and the new recruiting landscape. But man, they really haven't aren't doing real well in the state right now.
No, not at all. I pulled up their class. It looks like they've got 12 commitments and only five of them are from the state of, well, six of them are from the state of Florida, which is different because normally, you know, Florida schools and Texas schools, they recruit almost strictly in state. Obviously TCU will get somebody from Louisiana every year and you'll see those, but yeah, I mean, that's really interesting.
Well, once upon a time, it used to be that Florida was super desirable because they were the state's only SEC school and everybody wanted to stay in state, but they wanted to play in the SEC and that was the allure. I don't know what's happened to that. I mean, maybe the McElwain era kind of cooled that thing. And, you know, the SEC has been a little bit down, I guess, if you want to say that. Some people say that Alabama continues to win the national championship. Who knows? But that's kind of a narrative out there, whether it's true or not. And I don't know if that's taken hold in recruiting or what. It's just been a hodgepodge of factors, and Florida has not recruited well.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's definitely going to be interesting to see how it plays out as time progresses. Now getting to your over-under article, you had omit the win total in discussion is six, and you picked the over. You seem pretty high on Ole Miss, at least the offense. What do you think about the defense? Are you worried about that?
Well, the defense is definitely the question mark, right? I mean, it could be suspect, but I think you could say that about, you know, as I went through and wrote this story, you could say that about a number of SEC teams. What it really comes down to, and I always get into, you want to talk about bickering between Woody Womack and I and everybody else on the rival staff. I never thought Shea Patterson was, I mean, I think he's a great quarterback. Don't get me wrong. I just never saw the number one quarterback in the country. And I think maybe people are underestimating or overestimating how big of a loss that is for Ole Miss. And that's part of the reason why that number's so low is, you know, a second year head coach with a quarterback that nobody knows about when they just lost a star. And I don't know if replacing Shea, especially when you look at the output, is as big of a, I mean, it's a big mountain. Don't get me wrong. Cause he's at least proven, but I don't know if it's as big of a deal as everybody wants to think it is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the topic in the story around here has been the defense and trying to figure out what Wesley McGriff's going to do in his second year.
Yeah, and like I said, you worry about the defense, yeah, but how bad do you really think it can be? And I don't think that win total, I mean, I don't think six is a daunting number for this team. I think this is a talented team with obviously talented wide receivers. The defense would have to be pretty darn poor, I think, for this team to go 5-7. And if it goes 6-6, you get a push out of the bet. You know, it's as good as a win, in my opinion.
It is, and you're trying to win these people some money.
Yeah, and you know, how about that? I did well in the SEC last year. I didn't go under 500 in any conference. I went 500 twice and then over in the other league. So it was all luck, obviously. I'm not going to quit my job and become a gambling tout. I'll probably go 1-13 this year to even things out.
Right. Now, to wrap things up with your over-unders, you released your Big 12 one today. And you had the under on Texas Tech, which is obviously Ole Miss's opponent next week. What are your thoughts on Texas Tech?
I mean, last time we saw Cliff Kingsbury, he was saving his job by kind of eking out a win at Texas. I think he's gotten some goodwill there. I like Cliff. I've interacted with Cliff a bunch, so I don't want to, you know, I don't want him to be doomed. I'd love for everybody to keep the job forever, but the culture around there, it seems like everybody's walking on thin ice. The defense is always kind of a problem. They don't have a proven quarterback there. And for an offense that's going to throw the ball on every down with a bad defense, kind of maybe playing and coaching scared a little bit because it got leaked to the media that they were going to fire Kingsbury last year before he won that game. I just think it could be a perfect storm of factors where things just kind of snowball on them early in the season. And the Big 12, they're good Big 12 teams that I don't think are getting a ton of credit for being as good as they are. That's a tougher schedule than people want to think. I think Ole Miss is going to win that game, and you know that may set them down a bad path.
Yeah, I mean, either way, I mean, if Ole Miss loses that game, you know, there will automatically become questions about was Matt Luke the right hire. I mean, there already is, especially in Oxford, to be honest with you, still. But if Texas Tech loses that game, you might see a hot board on TexasTechSports.com within hours after the game ends. I mean, it's such.
Let me ask you this: Who did Ole Miss think they were going to hire? I mean, if everybody's so mad about Matt Luke, like who did they want?
Dave Doran.
Who is the name? Really?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, he had a great year last year.
I mean, he's,
do you think they could have gotten him?
Oh yeah. There was no doubt in their mind or the athletic director's mind that was something that could be accomplished.
I guess we'll see.
I mean, he's recruiting really well over there in North Carolina.
Yeah, and they had a pretty good year last year. But, you know, he's also blessed with a great quarterback there. Not a great quarterback, but an unsung quarterback, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I think Ole Miss made a good hire, but what do I know?
Now, did you apply for the opening for general manager with the Mets yet?
Yeah. They'll probably just hire Omar Minaya, and we'll go back to 2004. And I don't know. I can't believe I'm still watching this team. I watched them. They've given me kind of a glimmer of at least fun to watch baseball for the last 2 weeks. You know, they've been scoring runs, and DeGrom has been great. It's just, I'm so beat down by talking about and thinking about the Mets that I just can't have this conversation with us.
So you're saying you won't be going to Mets spring training next year?
No, you know, I'll definitely be there. I'm not going to lie to myself. I almost like, you know, I may stop watching until the Wilpons sell, but, you know, I'll be there. Half the cups in my house are, you know, Mets spring training cups or City Field cups. It keeps me in glassware, so I got to go get new dishes anyway.
That's awesome. Hey, Rob, I really appreciate the time. As always, we'll have to get you back on kind of once the season gets going.
Hey, no problem. Always appreciate it. Hi, Neil. I know you're over there.
Hey, Rob. Sorry I couldn't participate. Our thanks again to Rob Cassidy for his time today on the Soft Verbal Podcast. So you've cut out the lattes. You put in those Curly Q light bulbs, the brown bag, your lunch to work. But it still feels like payday keeps getting here a day or two late and a few hundred dollars short. Well, try this. Give State Farm agent Wally Morgan a call and tell him you'd like a free discount double check. It's a line-by-line review of your car insurance policy to make sure you're getting the discounts you deserve, like 10% for being a good driver, another 10% if your teenage driver happens to be a good student, and 17% for simply combining your car and home policies. Add all those State Farm discounts up, and it's pretty easy to see how you could be saving hundreds of dollars a year. So get started today by giving State Farm agent Wally Morgan in New Albany, Mississippi a call at 662-539-7062 because being there to help keep more of your money in your pocket is why he's here. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Discounts may vary state to state. This podcast is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? Well, it's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no-obligation evaluation means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just enjoying the podcast. Well, then listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. All right, Russell, we're 2 weeks into the high school season. There's already some injuries. Give us an update on those, if you would.
Yeah, Chad made a little bit of a post on Friday night during the Corky Kell Classic when Buford was playing. And Carter Colquitt had went down and was writhing in pain and left and went to the locker room crying. And it turned out yesterday that he has a complete tear to his MCL. And it seems to be, according to the doctor, at least a partial tear to the ACL. But they're going to probably let the swelling get down a little bit further before they do another MRI to determine the fate of his ACL. Obviously, if the ACL is torn as well as the MCL, that would end his senior season. And it would give Ole Miss an interesting decision to make. Obviously, last year, what they did with four-star wide receiver DeMarcus Gregory puts the thought in their mind a little bit, especially because Gregory just underwent another minor surgery on his knee. So there's always the impact that may have on their decision with Colquitt, as well as having Colquitt's teammate, Reese McIntyre, committed, who was not injured in the game and is expected to play the rest of the season. Now, another injury that took place was down in Meridian. Tupelo's playing Meridian. Tupelo actually was down 17-0, and wide receiver Jordan Jernigan, who's been committed to Ole Miss for quite some time, made a really big play. I think it was like a 54-yard gain on the down the sideline where it looked like he was going to score, but when he got tackled, he landed really hard on his shoulder, and it turned out yesterday that he has a dislocated shoulder, and Tupelo is going to be as cautious as they can, especially with their non-conference schedule, that they're going to hold him out probably about 3 weeks. Until conference play begins or division play begins, and then kind of go from there. Tupelo has also got some other injuries to deal with. But other than that, it seems like everybody else, for the most part, stayed healthy. It's going to be a show this Friday night at Lafayette High School. Lafayette's taking on Charleston. You get the chance to see Brandon Turnage, Eric Jeffries, and DeAndre Prince all on the field at the same time. And especially the way that Charleston uses Prince as basically a do-it-all athlete. He was playing quarterback. He played receiver sometimes. He was playing DB. He was all over the field. So getting the chance to see him in person, especially for Ole Miss fans, if that's something they'd be interested in doing, I'd highly recommend it.
Do they run a little red Corvette package for him? No, they should.
They could. I mean, but Prince really stood out. I watched everybody who played
last week.
DeAndre Prince really stood out. Seeing his debut, especially being one of the three-star commits for Ole Miss, which they have several, Prince really stood out.
Were you a big Prince fan, or was he kind of before your time?
He was far before my time.
I loved Prince, man. Prince was like, for me, Prince was the artist that you felt like you were sort of like listening to something you weren't supposed to listen to a little bit. And you felt kind of dirty, but it felt good. Like that, like Let's Pretend We're Married and some of those songs, pretty explicit in a not so explicit way now that you look back on it.
Right, yeah, you listen to music now and you're like,
yeah, it's nothing. Yeah. But back then, that was something. Like listening to Prince or watching HBO after midnight or Cinemax after midnight, that was like, or when you went over to Neil Fuller's house and his dad had a stack of Playboys and you snuck a few out before they went to bed, and then once you knew the house was quiet, yeah, that's when you knew you had a little rebellious side to you. You were just living on the edge. Prince kind of was part of that soundtrack.
The only memories I really have of Prince is Dave Chappelle's impersonations and the game, them playing basketball, and that's really my only memory of Prince. And I think he performed in the Super Bowl at one point. But
he did.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all I really know.
Yes. You're missed, Prince. I miss him. He was great. All right, so what else going on in recruiting? Nakobe Dean, we do this every week. Big story from Chad Simmons. What'd you take from it?
I took from it that there is a couple schools standing out in, I would say, Georgia, Florida State, and still Alabama. He said he visited there five times, which I knew about three of them. I didn't know there was five. And that's not near as many times as he's been at Ole Miss. But the length of the trip, round trip from Tuscaloosa, is quite a bit more than the round trip to Oxford and back. He also stated that his brother being on the team at Ole Miss was not going to play any factor at all in his recruitment. And it seemed like a candid answer more than just a, no, I don't want to talk about my brother being on the team being a factor. With Dean, a lot of the information that is shared is off the record. And for Chad to be able to get him on the record to say as much as he did, I mean, that's about a 5-minute read. And every bit of it is important because Nakobe makes a case for each school that he's still considering. And while he does that, he also says that he plans on eliminating two schools and making a top five as soon as possible. And currently, I would see that top five not including Mississippi State and Texas A&M and probably not Auburn either. But his relationship with Auburn's linebacker coach, T-Will, kind of stirs the pot a bit in terms of them.
So you think the final five is Florida State, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and?
Either Auburn or LSU.
Okay.
I mean, you could very well see him make his top five and it not have Ole Miss in it. But then everybody would be, you know, there'd be a meltdown. But that's a high possibility, especially because those are the five schools he's taking official visits to. And you really couldn't see him dropping a top five and not having the schools he's taking an official to, because that would kind of seem pointless.
There's a, as we wrap up, last thing, there's a JUCO five-star defensive lineman from Louisiana, Ole Miss, very much involved in, LSU's involved now. What's the latest with him?
Yeah, his brother's actually the one in JUCO down in southwest Mississippi.
I apologize.
He just got his first offer from LSU, which you can kind of read between the lines there, and LSU's, I guess they kind of felt a little bit threatened by Alabama and the other schools in the picture, including Ole Miss. But it still seems that Sopcich's headed towards LSU. But for LSU to make that offer and to make it public and to make the official offer public like they did when it happened, that showed that there was at least a little bit of danger area going on there. I know that's a school that John Summerall, the linebacker coach at Ole Miss, he's placed quite an emphasis on in building relationships there in Louisiana, especially because the linebacker coach before, Bradley Dale Pavito, is still recruiting that same area. He's just doing it with maroon and white on for Texas A&M rather than Ole Miss this year. And another thing I really kind of wanted to touch on real quick is the off-the-field staff. Recently, you know, Lee Wilbanks left for Indiana and Sean Patterson left football altogether, which left two big holes on the roster of the off-the-field staff with just weeks before the season. Now we're literally counting down the days, and those two openings are still there. They have made the decision to promote from within, it seems, for at least one position. Now, whether that's Brennan Chapman or Clayton Karcher or one of the other members of the off-the-field staff getting that promotion is still up for grabs and debate in terms of how it actually happened and what it's going to be. But they also did interview somebody from the American and from the Big Ten for those off-the-field roles. And a decision is expected to be made. I would say that they're hoping to make it, I mean, the sooner the better, because it's got to be awkward, you know, walking around those places currently while interviewing for a job in the SEC and then going back there and either working the rest of your year, your contract, or telling them you're leaving and telling your team you're leaving just days before kickoff.
We will we'll touch on some of those things next week. Maybe there'll be updates by this time next week, and as we get closer to the season. Where are you headed this weekend?
This weekend?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep that under wraps right now.
Oh, okay.
Last weekend, I was busy. I saw 5 games in 3 days. So
yeah, you were everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, this weekend, I'm probably stay a little bit closer to Lafayette County, but we'll see what happens.
You got to be careful with giving these information out.
I do. I have some fans and some groupies who like to tag along and report.
Ah. They follow you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That's the spirit.
All right, Russell, we'll stop there. Again, our thanks to Rob Cassidy for his time today on the podcast. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Do check out Billy's Pecans, billyspecans.com. They're fantastic. No kidding. You got to give them a shot. They're great. Until next week, take care.